going to talk about extractive activities. Not with the dentist, but...
Indeed, indeed.
I immediately had to think of the dentist. Yeah.
No, not the dentist. Something more pleasurable. So the purpose of this session is to inform the board of the work the staff has been performing in the last few months. Having asked the national standard setters whose staff helped to develop the 2010 extractive activities discussion paper to inform the board of any significant development in extractive activities since the publication of that discussion paper, the staff have been considering other relevant areas and whether there have been significant developments in those areas and how they might affect the research findings of the discussion paper and whether additional work is required. The staff has been considering new standards, amendments and other board publications issued since 2010, including the 2018 conceptual framework and the potential implications for the proposals in the 2010 discussion paper, and also changes since 2010 to reserve and resource classification systems and other reporting requirements such as payments to government, both of which were a feature of the discussion paper. The overall purpose of the staff's work, together with the feedback from the national standard setters, is to determine whether the discussion paper and the feedback on the discussion paper remain a valid starting point for the board as it starts its new research project on extractive activities, and whether there's any new issues that the board need to consider in the project. In most cases, the staff have not fully analysed the implications of any developments on the discussion paper's proposals, but simply highlighted where there is a potential impact that needs to be further considered. The agenda papers that you have been organised by the chapter headings of the discussion paper, and the staff have taken the opportunity to provide the board with a reminder of the proposals in the discussion paper and of the feedback from respondents, at the same time as summarising the staff's work. And Siobhan will take us through those agenda papers in a moment. There's no questions in those papers for board members, but staff would welcome any comments from board members. The cover paper, if I start with the cover paper, it includes a summary of the next steps for the project in paragraphs 10 to 13. The national standard setters whose staff helped to develop the discussion paper were Australia, Canada, Norway and South Africa, but there are many other jurisdictions which also have significant extractive industries and which apply IFRS, some of which have only begun applying IFRS since 2010. And the staff intend to obtain further feedback from as many of these jurisdictions as possible. And we've started this by requesting feedback from IFAS members as part of the papers submitted to its October meeting, where a panel discussion on extractive activities is being held. The intention of the additional outreach is to provide a more complete analysis to the board in the first half of 2020, which together with education sessions on the key features of extractive activities and the main financial reporting issues associated with those features will help the board when it decides the scope for this project. And before I hand over to Siobhan, who'll take us through the individual agenda papers in a little more detail, do board members have any comments or questions at this point on the next steps for the project as described in the cover paper?
No questions? Yeah, Nick?
You point out in paragraph 11 that you've had limited feedback from the users of financial statements so far. So just really talk about your plans there, because clearly that seems to be a critical element in helping define scope here, trying to, what the problem statement is.
Yeah, so we've been working with the investor team to try to do some outreach with users, and we've had some one-to-one meetings, and we'll continue with that activity. We actually went to CMAC as well, and the EFRAG user group. As part of the feedback that we've got from the national standard setters that we've asked already, part of their feedback involves their work talking to their investor community. And so the hope is, in addition to work that we can do here with our investor team and speaking with analysts through contacts that we have, that the further outreach that we do with other jurisdictions, we'll also hear from investors in those jurisdictions as to what they think the problem is, if there is a problem, and what the nature of that problem is. Because, as we've said on a number of occasions when we've had these sessions, identifying exactly what the problem is and what how users struggle if they do with the information that they're provided with is a key to actually setting the scope for this project.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you can go on.
Okay, so I will pause at the end of each of the agenda papers for more discussion or comments, but I'll just dive straight in. Agenda paper 19A. So the discussion paper proposed that the scope of an extractive activities standard should include only upstream activities, and that there should be a single accounting and disclosure model that applies to all extractive activities. While the main theme from respondents to the discussion paper was that the board should add a project to its active agenda, there were mixed views on what the scope of such a project should be. For example, respondents either supported developing a separate standard specifically for extractive activities or including extractive activities in a broader project that reconsiders intangible assets accounting. In 2018, the board added the extractive activities research project to its agenda. So the board is now seeking feedback to help it decide whether to replace or amend IFRS 6. So it's important to note that IFRS 6 was a temporary solution that exempts entities from applying paragraphs 11 and 12 of IAS 8 when developing an accounting policy. Consequently, IFRS 6 does permit diversity of accounting policies for the treatment of exploration and evaluation expenditure. So we have so far consulted with the national standard setters that helped develop the discussion paper, CMAC, and other stakeholders. And consistent with the feedback on the discussion paper, we've really noted that there continues to be mixed views about exactly what the scope of an extractive activities project should be. And consequently, stakeholders consulted with provided a very diverse range of options which the board should consider when it decides the scope of this research project, but for which there is actually no clear preference. So these options are listed in paragraph 4, and using the targeted standards level review of disclosures project to develop a disclosure-only standard that scopes in all extractive activities, improving recognition, measurement, and disclosure requirements of IFRS 6 to improve consistency and comparability in financial reporting, withdrawing IFRS 6 and including extractive activities in a project that considers the accounting for intangible assets more generally, developing guidance on how an entity with extractive activities can apply existing IFRS standards, developing an industry-specific standard which would scope in the accounting for all extractive activities, or maintaining IFRS 6 and doing nothing. For example, some stakeholders here said that there are no indications that users are not adequately managing the diversity of accounting policies, and therefore no changes are required to IFRS 6. Additionally, some preparers, mainly in the oil and gas industry, have said IFRS 6 helps comparability because it enables them to maintain accounting policies that are consistent with other oil and gas entities that report under the US GAAP. It's important to note that depending on what the scope of the research project will be, not all of the components of the discussion paper that we're discussing today may be relevant. And for those components that will be, further analysis will be needed to determine whether those considerations and proposals are still suitable. So with that, does the board have any comments or questions about Agenda Paper 19A?
Then, Chao.
First of all, thank you very much. I think it's a very good paper. I learn a lot from your paper and get a lot of information. Just, I think, two questions. First question about paragraph 4F and also including paragraph 36. Both paragraphs mention that for some preparers or many preparers, they think IFRS 6 work well. The reason because they apply U.S. GAAP, and they didn't want to change. And they think that this is maintained consistency with, you know, accounting practice, something like that. For me, I still struggling. First, I also engage some of the preparers in oil and gases. The message I got, they really there is a big demand from ISB to set a separate, you know, IFRS, not simply rely on U.S. GAAP, because otherwise one company, oil company, some part they have to follow, comply with U.S. GAAP, some part they have to comply with IFRS, such as revenue standards, financial instrument standards. They would like to have a single set of accounting standard to be complied with. And secondly, I think there's some concern if simply applying U.S. GAAP, whether those accounting treatments really consistent with conceptual framework, our conceptual framework, whether those accounting treatments really consistent with other IFRS standards, because our standards are developing, are changing. So there's some concern there. So I think we needed to do further outreach to make sure whether, you know, those view is really fair and whether really can result in so-called consistent accounting outcome. And the second question about the paragraph 5, you say that although the view is mixed, but it seems that many of the stakeholders suggest that we should focus on, at current stage, maybe, you know, prioritize the, you know, disclosure part. I think there is no doubt, but I'm not sure. When I go through all the papers, it seems that not only disclose, there's a wide divergent with regard to measurement, recognition measurement, and even impairment other areas. So I think only focus on disclosure requirements maybe cannot, you know, meet the demands from those preparers and also other stakeholders. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess on that last point, I think the demand for disclosure in terms of reserve information and sort of what we've been hearing. I think in terms of when we talk to investors, when we talk to users, they are quite clear that the reserve information, reserve and resource information, is one of the key pieces of information they use for these types of companies. And there is some diversity in reactions to the information that they're getting. Some users that we talk to say, actually, we're getting sufficient information, we're happy with the information that we're getting. Other users, and certainly when we talked to CMAQ, there was feedback that we received that actually there was a frustration because there was diversity in the type of information that they were getting. There was, you know, a perceived quality difference between oil and gas entities and mining entity information, and it wasn't quite meeting their needs. And so I think the focus that, you know, we've heard feedback on disclosures is coming from users in terms of that is the key piece of information, and therefore if that's the key piece of information and there are frustrations around that, that seems to indicate that that's an area that we potentially should look at. And certainly from the national standard setters that we've talked to, they've highlighted disclosure as one of the key things that they thought the board potentially should focus on. And even when we talk to preparers, although they might not necessarily talk as much about that side of things in terms of the reserve and resource information, I think there is from some we've heard that there's some acceptance that actually standardising that could be helpful. But we do also hear from preparers some worries about the board getting involved in reserve and resource information. and whether it should, and also then problems that then might arise in terms of if those requirements were different to their regulatory requirements. And I think in terms of you going through the paper and thinking, actually, there are a lot of other requests here and a lot of other ideas of what to focus on. I think it's sort of what Siobhan was indicating in the tee-up, in that there are a lot of divergent views out there as to what the board should be addressing and what the board should focus on. And you're right, in terms of what we hear from preparers, quite a lot of what we hear from preparers is the need for some further guidance on certain aspects of applying existing IFRS standards to their businesses, because they feel that actually they've got some complex agreements that may not necessarily be in other industries, which they find difficult to apply IFRS standards to. So there is a mixture of ideas here, and I think that is going to be a challenge for the board. But we felt that sort of disclosure was one of the recurring themes that came out of the feedback that we got, albeit it's obviously stronger with the investor community. In terms of your other point, in terms of US GAAP, and actually, I think what you say about, well, we need to be careful there and make sure, is it consistent with the conceptual framework, et cetera. I think the point that was being made here, and it's mainly in the oil and gas community, is that some of the feedback that we've heard from that community is actually IFRS 6 does afford them that ability to adopt an accounting policy that is consistent with their peers that also apply US GAAP, and therefore it helps that they feel that it helps their comparability. And I think their worry is if a different policy was prescribed through this project, that then actually rather than solving a diversity issue there, it actually creates for them some additional diversity, because as an industry, albeit it's not necessarily that every single oil and gas company adopts exactly the same policy, there is obviously diversity there. But successful efforts, which is a method of accounting in oil and gas, which is permitted through US GAAP, is seemingly the prevalent accounting policy in the industry, and IFRS 6 allows those companies to actually adopt the same sort of policy. So that's sort of the point that we were making there, but there are obviously a lot of questions around that.
Mary?
As I thought about this paper, and I thought, good job doing an update, I think it would be very useful if we could start separating out the strands of, as Tim said, the very different thoughts that are conflated here. And I see them kind of going, I have an observation, then I see them going into a couple of buckets. One observation is nothing in this set of papers said to me that we have to reconsider our basic approach to standard setting in terms of focusing on types of activities rather than types of entities, even though there was some call in here for we should write an extractive industry standard, and it wasn't clear if that was talking about the extraction activity or if it was we want something that adapts all the standards to us. So I think we should make clear that if we're going to do anything, it's going to be consistent with our regular style, which is to focus on accounting for the activity, and kind of take some permutations off the table in terms of an industry, specific standard soup to nuts. And then on that point with the complex structures, Tim, that you just mentioned, and it's in here, I think there are probably a couple of possible drivers that I wouldn't be surprised if both were there. One is that there are, I think, some complex risk sharing, economic interest sharing, and I bet it is hard to work through the standards and figure out what the right application of the mix of IS 32 in terms of what kind of interest am I, issuing, maybe IFRS 10, 11, and 12, maybe even IFRS 9 in terms of what am I acquiring. But I would be very surprised if we were going to do a special standard on complex structures and how you apply our standards, because there's so many different combinations. It almost, you know, Sue's going to shoot me for this, sounds more like, you know, if there's specific fact matter, it's something the interpretation committee might look at and say, how do you think, you know, about the interaction, almost shades of IFRIC 12, you know, how do you take all of IFRS standards and apply them to the most typical fact pattern? But I don't think that's standard setting in the sense of writing new standards. Now, it's not clear to me whether the comments about the complex structures are just, it's hard, and a little application guidance would help so we don't have to reinvent the wheel each time, or if it's, it's hard and we don't like the answer, so we'd like a tailored approach, and whether some of that is another way of expressing maybe comments that we expect to hear in the PIRs of 10, 11, and 12. And so I think it would help to try and get a handle on what set of issues it is about, complex issues, without encouraging in any way the notion that we're going to think about doing standard setting for the topic of complex arrangements and accounting for complex arrangements, but just to understand whether it's an application issue, it's an application I don't like the outcome issue, or if it's another way of saying a generic comment that we should actually be considering the PIR of 10, 11, and 12, and then stream them into the right bucket. So I'm trying to take apart the strands that are in here. And then I think we have a real, there's a financial reporting research question we absolutely have to answer, which is, what are we going to do about IFRS 6? We can either keep it as is, we can keep it with changes, or we can withdraw, either replacing it or saying, here's how you address the issues in IFRS 6 under IFRS standards. And so I think we have to do the work that helps us get to an answer on that question. I'm not saying which one we should be aiming for. I think we have to put out here that this is one of the questions we have to answer, instead of continuing to call IFRS 6 a temporary standard. You know, just what is its role going forward? And it something that reminds me of the discussion we had about our financial instruments with characteristics of equity project yesterday, maybe the day before, was the issue about disclosure could maybe be either rolled into anything we were going to do about IFRS 6 or treated separately. And we probably need to figure out what we're doing about IFRS 6 and the timelines involved and the priority of disclosure improvements. Is it low, medium, high? To think about whether we do it in conjunction, separately, or not at all. But I say these things because I think if we could try and both bucket things that relate to the single question of what do we do with IFRS 6, and then identify the others as other pieces or components that we have to answer, it might help us take all the input and think about how we come to a conclusion about what, if any, standard setting we do.
Yeah, and actually one of the national standard setters that we reached out to had that sort of idea of process in terms of actually maybe thinking about the disclosure separately and then thinking about IFRS 6 and what we do with IFRS 6 as two separate
well,
topics.
I don't want to jump to that conclusion. I actually think we probably have to figure out what we're doing about IFRS 6 before we can make a conclusion about disclosure, because that might be actually pushing a view that we shouldn't do anything about IFRS 6. Let's do disclosure first and then see if we need something. And I think we have to make a decision about what we're going to do with IFRS 6. And then once we know that, we can figure out if it would be better to do as one project in parallel or in sequence.
Yeah, and there is one nuance here that's worth mentioning, just for clarity, in terms of IFRS 6 obviously deals with expiration and valuation activities and expenditure thereon. When we're talking about disclosures and we're talking about reserve disclosures, actually that's a stage beyond expiration and evaluation. You've with a reserve, you've discovered something and you've decided it's commercial and you're either producing or you might be in development or what have you. And so there is there is actually a sort of scoping question around that as well.
There is, but I think we drive people crazy when we say, now we're amending IFRS 6 for disclosures about how you do exploration and evaluation, and then we're amending, you know, IFRS 6 or its successor for disclosures about reserves. I think we have to have a plan.
Chung Wu.
Thank you. Just maybe I would like to suggest telling us to make a research on some problems of ES gap counting on this the similar issue. The reason why I'm asking you is in the last paragraph of your paper, most preparers think IFRS 6 is okay because we are using all US GAAP on this issue. So there's no diversity yet here. So that kind of a response is a little different from the response that was made on 2010 discussion paper. That's a big change. So 10 years, some experience, you know, US GAAP is a kind of a prevalent accounting standard. So it seems to me that the real objective of this, this project is to develop better IFRS than US GAAP. To do that, we need to investigate some problems, issues in the current accounting practice, that is US GAAP. That's one suggestion.
Yeah. And the US GAAP reference is really to do with oil and gas. I just want to clarify that. No, that's not necessarily a mining company statement as well.
Gary.
Thank you. Begin. I thought it was a really well-written set of papers, you know, by the staff, and maybe I thought they were so well because I don't like the subject, but they're still well-written. Just a few comments, and say them now because they don't necessarily fit later in it. I think this is a good project to go forward with. I mean, I sort of like, when you said develop an industry-specific standard, it's probably more of an activity-specific standard. I mean, the issues in this industry are very much unique and as big as the issues in IFRS 17 were for that industry. I think some of the things we're going to bump into in here is there's companies that only do extractive, and then there's vertically integrated. And if you're doing the vertically integrated with the major companies, you know, where's the cutoff between E&P and R&M activities? And I don't know if that's important or not, but refining and marketing is something entirely different, you know, from production. And the independents, I think they tend to sell into the pipeline or into the larger grid, the vertically integrated all the way through. I think Mary mentioned complex structures. I know these things operate extensively in joint ventures and joint operations and similar structures. I think you're going to run into that if you go forward with a, you know, some form of recognition and measurement and presentation standards as opposed to only disclosures. And I think heavily unique to this industry but not exclusive to it is, again, if it's a full R&M standard for the activity, we're going to run into environmental cleanup costs and perhaps even cap and trade and so on. I don't know if, you know, we're going to have to address them. Whether we scope them in or say that it doesn't need to be addressed is a decision way, way down the line in there. I think, you know, the U.S. GAAP, if the preparers are saying IFRS 6 works fine as it is, then that would imply most of the outreach should be to users and, you know, investors and so on. And if the preparer is okay where it is, they don't need to know more. If you're following U.S. GAAP, okay, you know, I think U.S. GAAP, I think the successful efforts is heavily used in the global integrated companies. I think you run into full cost when you go down to more localized and more closely held companies. I don't know about those in the middle. But if you're going to have the supply to the U.S., the National Energy Act requires both methods to be available to companies in the industry and that are within the U.S. in any event. But those acts and most of the current U.S. standards developed in the era, the 70s had oil crises, embargoes, and now there's a glut of oil around the world. So the environmental the supply and demand issues are entirely inverted. And then last week, I was in the States, I talked to some reasonably senior finance people at two of the global oil companies, just briefly, just kind of offline going through the projects, and they're just making a point. Mining, they view, is entirely different than oil and gas. Even with oil and gas, they're somewhat different, mostly because it's gaseous, there's different ways to capture it than oil, you know, liquid, a gas versus a solid, if you will, in the grounds. They just think they're different. So sharing that with it to go forward. See, I said now because I don't think this neatly fits all that well later on.
I also thank you for the papers and the way this is summarized. What is a very big project? It feels like it's an octopus with lots of arms flying all over the place. So I have heard others say about identifying areas to focus, and that's consistent with what Mary's suggesting, that we create buckets or something where we can look at the issues. Disclosure doesn't sit in its own bucket, unfortunately, because disclosure will affect the other things that we could identify as buckets. So one of the things we hear about is this exploration and evaluation expenditure, the thing that is the focus of IFRS 6, because we have to remember that it's all the other IFRS that kick in. 6 is focused on exploration and evaluation. So when you make that comment about US GAAP and people aligning with US GAAP, it's about that little section, the exploration and evaluation activities. So we've got questions around that, and that would seem to be a bucket. So picking up on Gary's points, you know, there are differences between oil and gas and mining, but we also know the policy choices reflect size as well. It's not just the two industry sectors. As the entities break up by size, they align up here around one policy choice and down here in the small ones around another policy choice. So that's one area. That also touches on the intangibles that people bring up, whether the answer's in IAS 38. So maybe that's one bucket. I think another bucket is around the accounting issues, and you've talked to us about different accounting issues that are there, and that includes impairment, which has never worked so well for entities in these industries. Touching on the provisions, Gary mentioned. So provisions. If we said there was a separate... Both of those two buckets would have disclosure issues related to them. If we said there was a separate bucket around disclosure, I think the separate one is around the resources and reserves, which are non-financial disclosures. So immediately take us into the space of, well, you know, are we actually going to be standard setting on non-financial disclosures for extractive industries? And you've already touched on this. There's so many issues. It's in the discussion paper, but also in the work you're presenting. There are so many issues about resources and reserves. But I would have that as a separate bucket, whereas the other disclosure issues belong in the other two buckets. So I've got three at the moment, I think, three buckets.
Yes, Peter.
A couple of people mentioned risk sharing. I thought I'd just remind you that we've got a project in the research pipeline on contingent and variable consideration. And what we've said, what you said when you put it in the pipeline originally, was that once we've done that, there might be some follow-up on risk sharing arrangements. Obviously, some way down the line still.
Down the pipeline.
Yeah.
Very appropriate in this case. Okay.
Okay. Agenda paper 19B. Discussion paper proposed that the definitions of reserves and resources from the CRISCO and PRMS classification systems be incorporated into a standard about extractive activities. Although most respondents to the discussion paper agreed with these definitions, they were concerned about the feasibility of incorporating a third-party standards into the IFRS standards. We note that although there have been improvements to the reserve and resource classification systems that were considered, these improvements do not affect the considerations or proposals in the discussion paper. Does the board have any questions or comments about Agenda Paper 19B? Agenda Paper 19C.
I'll go on B. This begins to look at the whole thing about resources and reserves, and whether we have a role here. And Nick's already raised the issue of users, and we know some users. We know one thing that users tell us is this is one of the most important areas of information they need. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to provide it, because presumably they have extensive systems where they can get this information now. So we really don't know. Well, it brings back to Siobhan's first question, which is, what is the problem? I mean, going to the buckets is trying to scope out the problem. But in here, we know how important the information is, but also users must already be getting it somewhere. So do we have a role here or not? So okay. Scope question.
Can I ask two questions around that? So I guess the first one for me is, the way I've always thought about the reserves and resources is that they inform the value, the on-balance sheet valuation, if you have capitalized the expenses that go with that exploration activity. So they tell you about what the value is, whether the value of that asset is supported by what's still in the ground, is the way I would have thought about it. And, is there an issue here, to Anne's point about the information is available? Is there an issue here of inconsistency of information? And is this information provided in all locations, or is it only where there's particularly strong, in all IFRS locations, or only when there's particularly strong regulatory intervention?
I think it's the latter. So some jurisdictions do have strong regulatory requirements about disclosing reserve and resource quantities. But I think it's also really important to remember that each jurisdiction requires their own classification system. So CRISCO and PRMS are really just a framework that other jurisdictions use to develop their own. So I guess, for example, Australia has their own reporting code that they use, that the stock exchange requires entities to report under. But it's disclosures that are separate from the financial statements, so they're not... at times, they're not required, I guess, the same level of quality as a set of financial statements would be. So this information in some jurisdictions may not be audited. And sometimes it may be difficult to verify whether or not that information has been independently reported as well. And there's also, as a result of having these different classification systems, there are some inconsistencies, both in the definitions and in the reporting. But what we've found so far is that they are primarily seem to be consistent.
And then can I ask one other question just while I want? We touched on US GAAP. Does US GAAP require some form of reserve disclosures?
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
It's extensive, but it's unaudited. But it is a footnote.
Okay.
And so, I mean, one of the purposes of doing the extended outreach to other jurisdictions is really to get an understanding of exactly what are the requirements in some of these other jurisdictions that have the large extractive industries. And we have heard comments from users that we've spoken to that actually the information is not always available globally. It may be available in their own jurisdiction with their own national regulatory requirements, but it's not always available globally, and that's something that we want to explore a little bit more. And in terms of the use of the information, I think the use of the information that a user is taking that reserve and resource information for is not necessarily to sort of validate the exploration and evaluation asset that they might have capitalized on their balance sheet, because, you know, in terms of the reserve information, as I say, you're a stage beyond the exploration and evaluation there. You're in production or you're developing. It's, I think, more for valuation purposes. It's there. This is the quantities of hydrocarbons or minerals that are available to this entity, and with an assumption on price, I can come up with some idea of a value and some assumptions of cost to extract and that type of thing. But so I think it's more of a valuation.
Mary?
I'm just thinking about Anne's challenge to us of at least being aware when we are moving from more classic financial statement reporting to financial reporting. If without a lot of additional work, you could kind of go through major jurisdictions with extractive industries and say, are disclosures about reserves and do they have disclosures, not what they are, but do they have any kind of reasonably developed disclosure requirements? And if so, are they included in the financial reporting framework? Are they a regulatory overlay or not? That would at least tell us whether we, you know, if we decided to do something, whether we were acting maybe more in the role that historically a regulator, market regulator, has taken, or if we're more in the role that historically an accounting standard setter has taken. It isn't going to constrain my conclusion in the end, but I think I'd like to know whether this is kind of brave new territory. I'm not talking in detail. I think this is high level. Where has it been established to date?
In paragraph 27, we say that some of these definitions may fall outside the scope of general purpose financial reporting, I mean, including them. Some of these reserves actually are the basis for determining recoverability, useful life, especially when the depreciation of the assets are based on units of account. And in the following page, when we show the A3 here in an Appendix A, it is inappropriate for the board to delegate some of the standard setting authority to third parties. I think that definitely it's a difficult territory to go. But we also had this issue when we were dealing with fair value, and some of different standard bodies for defining fair value. You could have fair value in different ways. But I think that we managed this very well when we did IFRS 13. We sort this out. I think that we might try to do the same, because definitely for this industry, not only gas and oil, but also for mining, having the information about the reserve, at least the probable reserve, it's quite important for determining the value of assets in the balance sheet.
Okay. All right. Move on.
Agenda paper 19C. The discussion paper proposed that legal rights, such as exploration rights, should form the basis of an asset, and subsequent to the acquisition of such a right, the asset would be enhanced by the performance of exploration and evaluation activities. The proposal also suggested that the unit of account for such an asset be based on a geographical boundary of the legal right and a grouping of individual assets that are integral to and physically and commercially inseparable from other assets within the unit of account. Although most respondents to the discussion paper agreed with the proposal to recognize an asset when the legal rights are acquired, almost all disagreed that subsequent exploration and evaluation activities would always enhance such an asset. These respondents did not believe such activities met the definition of an asset when applying the 2010 conceptual framework. Many respondents agreed with the proposed unit of account. Since the discussion paper was published, the board has issued a revised definition of an asset and asset recognition criteria. We believe that initial and subsequent costs of exploration and evaluation activities, including legal rights, can meet the definition of an asset and the asset recognition criteria when applying the 2018 conceptual framework. But further analysis will be required to determine whether this is appropriate. Furthermore, we believe the suggestions for unit of account in the discussion paper remain appropriate when applying the guidance in the 2018 conceptual framework, but that other units of account may be appropriate and could provide users of financial statements with more useful financial information. Does the board have any questions on agenda paper 19C?
One thing that I like this paper is that we already have this type of issue in the industry. I mean, that every time that we do impairment test in this industry, it's quite common moving. Might we say that should be not common the definition of the CGU changing in the mining industry and the oil and gas industry is not so uncommon, having some definitions the way that they are dealing with all of this. And again, it affects the recoverability and the measurement of the assets. Definitely, I think that's one point important to be addressed.
Mary?
I think the issues in this paper are probably the conceptually the most critical to the question of whether we keep IFRS 6, we withdraw IFRS 6, or we keep IFRS 6 with amendments. And my impression is at the time the board was finalizing IFRS 6 with other things that had going on, it felt it didn't have time to consider in depth kind of the conceptual issue, and so said park that and make sure there's good information about what people are doing. But to me, I think a step we'd have to take is saying, okay, from what we've learned about exploration and evaluation, how do we, in the first instance, map it against research and development activities? I'm not suggesting that we should be saying, should we do an IS 38 reconsideration? I think we would say, is 38, you know, are the activities that are conducted in E&E comparable to research and development? What would IS 38 tell us about those activities, you know, accounting for those activities, and answer questions like, if in this instance, If you're doing research and development in, let's say, pharma, you generally don't have to get a license up front to do the research. And does the fact that you get a license up front somehow mean that subsequent expenditures related to that right you've got to do the research changes the accounting for costs that would otherwise be considered to be research costs or development costs? Because of the limits in 38 about capitalizing additional costs once you've recognized an intangible asset. And I think in terms of trying to answer the research question of should we keep IFRS 6, should we keep it with unchanged modifications or withdraw it, we probably have to do the analysis of these E&E activities versus the existing requirements of 38, not what 38 should be or how we'd rewrite them, just what would 38 tell us, and that might then help us think about what we want to do about IFRS 6.
Adele?
No, it's...
Oh, okay, that was the previous problem.
Yes, I would have brought this point up for the next paper where 38 is mentioned, but Mary's begun this idea now. I think that the staff could usefully try and apply IS 38 to exploration and evaluation expenditure and see how that would work or not, because that's something we have heard from stakeholders that just use IAS 38, and I think that's what Mary's raising as a question, you know, how different, she wants to know how different it is in pharma compared to in a mining operation. So whether you could do some work to try and apply the IAS 38 type test, the standard as written, to a mining operation and to see how capitalization would look, I think that would be useful.
Thank you. Just a curiosity on the information asset here. And it seems to me it information asset meets the definition of a conceptual framework. But I just wonder, in practice, how much the amount of this information asset is the total cost of exploration and the evaluation activity expenditures, or some part of those expenditures? Just curiosity, you know.
I guess from experience, it's generally not the full cost of everything they've incurred to that point. It's how valuable someone believes that information actually is, because it'll, I guess, outline what's been explored for already and what exists in the ground in terms of drilling and sampling results. But it's completely, the value of that is dependent on what's negotiated between the two companies.
in that case, you consider some kind of a fair value or some kind of a net selling price of that information to others when you decide which cost is included in that information as well?
I'm not sure it even would meet the definition of fair value. It really is completely dependent on what someone's going to be willing to pay for it, less so how much you could get for it on market.
Just curious, because the amount of this information asset is huge enough to cover all the costs of it, and exploration and the evaluation, then it looks like a good intangible asset. So maybe many preparers are happy with our idea. That's why I'm so, we need to be very careful in recognizing this information asset and checking with the definition of assets or not.
Yeah, I mean, certainly one of the things that we did intend to do before we come back to the board next year is a bit of research on accounting policies under IFRS 6 and just to get a bit of a sense. We've tried to, in the papers, indicate some of that diversity, but try to get some sense of what that diversity is, what type of, because in the diversity, it's not just about what's capitalised or what's, whether they capitalise or whether they expense, but it's also about what they actually capitalise as well. In terms of trying to, whilst it would be difficult, but it's something that we can have a think about as we do that research. In terms of, I think, your original question about how much of the exploration asset is, that people have got on their balance sheets today, is the information asset that we're talking about in the discussion paper, and how much is maybe the legal right. We can see what might, what that research might tell us about that. But I mean, in terms of the activity that's creating that information, and that's all of the drilling and the evaluating type activity. But that's something that we can look into.
I'll just tell everyone else, there's a research team who are doing just that at the moment, and that'll be very helpful for us. So they're looking at IFRS reporters, multiple countries, and working out what is being capitalised into the exploration and evaluation asset, what sort of costs are going in there, and equally what things are not being capitalised by types of entity, industry, country, that sort of thing. So I think the timing of that will be quite good for us. You know about that too.
All right.
Agenda paper 19D. So the discussion paper proposed measuring exploration and evaluation assets at historical cost. It proposed that IAS 36 should not apply to capitalise exploration and evaluation costs, and that instead management would impair the asset only when, in their judgment, there is a high likelihood that the carrying amount will not be recoverable in full. In applying this judgment, the discussion paper also proposed that extractive entities apply a separate set of indicators to assess whether its exploration and evaluation assets are impaired. Almost all respondents to the discussion paper agreed with the proposal to measure exploration and evaluation assets at historical cost. However, most respondents opposed the proposal that IAS 36 should not apply to exploration and evaluation assets. The discussion paper primarily focused on historical cost and fair value measurement bases. However, we note that applying the 2018 conceptual framework, a different measurement basis or combination of measurement bases may be identified as being more appropriate than those considered in the discussion paper, or may provide further support for using historical cost as a measurement basis. Again, it's another area where further analysis would be required. Does the board have any questions about agenda paper 19D?
Gary?
I think in an impairment, I think the issue you're going to run into is, and my sense is, if we only did one thing in this project, it'd be information on reserves. But as oil prices fluctuate a lot, at $40 a barrel, things are impaired, at $60 a barrel or not. But these prices move, not necessarily driven by market conditions, but by everything else. The question is, when it falls below the recovery value, are we going to have an impairment, or is it or is there a middle ground where it's sort of temporarily held and, you know, pending recovery, similar to, you know, what you might have done in the old days with, you know, pension assets. They go underwater, they go above, you know, but ultimately sort of work themselves out. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's going to be a contentious issue. You know, I think particularly if you're addressing this project at the time when oil prices are low.
And what struck me looking at the responses that we got last time is how much of it seemed to be coming from a concern about volatility and not liking that.
Unusual.
And combined with the first paper, which showed us that preparers are really maybe prefer that we don't worry them. That sounds like a combination which is pretty dynamite based on our experience. So I think we're just going to have a very good foundation for thinking that there's a problem to solve and a pretty solid understanding of what user needs really are if we're going to go wading out into this sort of space. Looking at Nick, because he's going to have to help us, because I see that the preparers have told us that users aren't interested in this information.
I mean, I think that it depends on the business model, I think it's the first thing to say, and the whole variety of business models in this area. There are definitely some where they are, you know, users are doing an asset valuation here and they want to do something that's up to date. But because of the fluctuations, they're almost more interested in the reserve number, and then they'll put their own oil price number or their own medium-term oil price number into their models rather than necessarily going back to what had been done at the end of the last reporting place. Now, if going down the fair value route allows us to bring reserve requirements or reserve and resources into our remit, that may be the route we end up getting into it. But I think it's the volume number that they want, and they use their own commodity price forecasts.
Okay.
Agenda paper 19E. I won't summarise all of the disclosure objectives and requirements proposed because they're quite extensive, but these are summarised in paragraphs 6 to 9. Although respondents to the discussion paper agreed that the quality of disclosure for extractive activities could be improved, they expressed concern about the volume and granularity of disclosures being proposed. We note that following the publication of guidance which clarifies the application of materiality to financial statement disclosures, that these publications might help address some of the concerns that were raised by respondents to the discussion paper. We also note that the proposed disclosure objectives and requirements may no longer be appropriate. This is because the way in which disclosure objectives and requirements are written has changed since 2010 and may be subject to change again based on the outcomes of the targeted standards level review of disclosures project. And also the disclosure needs of users and other stakeholders may have changed since 2010 as well. Does the board have any questions about agenda paper 19E?
To do.
We have been putting emphasis on the good side, reserves, proper reserves. One thing that we can see and we have seen a lot in the news is the accident and problems, some contingencies related to this type of industry. I think that we should, in a certain away brings these, because it's already covered in ISTSF. Loads, if not all, subject we are dealing here are covered in other standards as well. And then since we are talking about a specific industry or activity, therefore I think that we should bring this important disclosure to this paper here.
Nick?
One more comment is that another thing that worries me is that bringing certain information into the financial statements, it's supposed that they should be auditable. We should, in a certain way, think about that. I mean, just not bring information into the financial statements. I have already said that once. I mean, that we are not going to reduce the uncertainty just because you brought this into the financial statement. It has to be audited. That's it.
Nick?
I appreciate we're relatively early into the process of testing our potential new approach for disclosures in the targeted standard levels review of disclosures. But I think there's some helpful direction there in terms of perhaps how you interact with users going forward in terms of what information you need, how are you going to use it, why do you need this information. And it may go beyond disclosures. It may be more broadly trying to eke out from their perspective what the problem statement is here, really trying to drill down and understanding their information needs.
Mary?
I had some reservations about what Tadeo was saying about incorporate disclosures about liabilities, about the negative side in any project on disclosure, because we do have a standard and those obligations should be covered by that standard. I think, you know, when we get to the point of if we are doing any standard setting, we can include reminders, examples, et cetera. But I don't think we should approach the application of IS 37 by an extractive company as being something that needs standard setting. That's the first reaction out of the box. We could comment about application, strengthening application, typical examples, et cetera, but I don't think we say, here's 37A to be applied by extractive companies.
Siobhan, harking over to the PFS project, where you've got P&Ls by function and by nature, I don't know if the predominant here is by function or by nature, but to the extent they're by function, I think disaggregation of expenses up, it's going to be interesting, for this project, whether maybe it just naturally happens already, or we should specify some guidance between lifting costs, payments and lease payments, and fees to governments and profit sharing with joint ventures and so on. So there's a lot of sorts of costs that you don't commonly bump into elsewhere. Again, that's an oil and gas comment. I don't know if it's equally applicable in mineral or not.
Yes?
Agenda paper 19F. So the discussion paper considered the Publish What You Pay disclosure model as put forward by the Publish What You Pay Coalition. The discussion paper made no proposals about this disclosure model, although it did ask respondents about their views. Although respondents to the discussion paper agreed that such disclosures are useful, they were uncertain whether these fell within the scope of the IFRS and about the volume of disclosure which would be required. We have been made aware of recent developments in disclosing such payments. Note that such disclosure has begun to be introduced at a jurisdictional level. Does the board have any questions about Agenda Paper 19F?
I'll go. I think this came into the discussion paper because it was very topical at the time. So it's salutary for us as we think about how we're influencing standard setting by things that are getting a lot of currency and attention. And you can see us doing that, and that makes sense because it's the world we're engaged in. But I think you've given us some information to suggest that this has been picked up elsewhere in terms of disclosures. To the extent that it also touches on another topic that's been raised with us, which is about tax transparency, and that's an area that we have not felt that it was appropriate for IFRS, the board, to engage with the tax transparency. I did think of that issue when I was reading this paper. I thought there were some parallels, and for the reasons that we didn't engage with tax transparency would be also reasons that we wouldn't engage on this issue. So I think it's there because at the time people saw it as important and they wanted to address it, but I just don't feel it's something that we would be picking up on now.
Just picking one comment from I listened yesterday or the day before, that we don't want to bring some moral issues into the financial statements here. And then it sounds that part of the reputational risk worried about bringing this information. It sounds much more a government requirement than something that we should do in the financial statements.
Okay.
Okay, well done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.